Hello, Claire Nichols here with another special episode of The Hub on Books. And today I'm bringing you a brand new series made just for you, our podcast listeners. This is all about debut writers, those authors making their very first foray into the publishing world. And Sarah Lestrange has been speaking to these first-time authors. Sarah, what's the first book you'll be sharing with us?
It's The Lucky Galah, Claire, by Tracy Sorensen, which is set in the fictional town of Port Badminton, Western Australia. It's about the Johnson family, whose father works as a radar technician at the time of the Apollo missions to the moon. And Lucky, the Galah, receives transmissions from the satellite dish, of course, that is used to track the moon missions.
Wow.
And Claire, this fictional town of Port Badminton is loosely based on Carnarvon, where Tracy Sorensen grew up. Now, you're from WA. Have you ever been there to Carnarvon?
I have. I've driven to Carnarvon a couple of times. The thing I always think about when I think about Carnarvon is they've got a big banana there. Carnarvon's a big banana growing place. And unlike the big banana, which you might have seen in New South Wales in Coffs Harbour, which is very shiny and beautiful, I'd say maybe the big banana in Carnarvon's maybe more rustic, maybe more homemade. It has its own beautiful charms and I'm a big fan.
Well, that's good that you're a fan of it.
So, Sarah, what can you tell us about the author of The Lucky Galah?
Tracy Sorensen is a journalist and an academic. Currently, she's based in Bathurst, New South Wales. And Claire, this book has been a labour of love. It began in 2005, and here it is in 2018.
Wow.
I know, it's dedication, isn't it?
Yeah.
Before we hear more about the story, here's Tracy talking about the process of bringing it together.
Very long gestation, including quite major illness along the way. And, you know, I was doing all these slabs, you know, like I'd do the wooden salad bowl, blah, 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 write that. The bead curtain, blah, 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 write that. So I had all these slabs, piles and piles of slabs.
Of course,
and
no one
bits.
Listening will understand what you mean by that, but you know what you mean by that.
I know what I
and
mean
by that.
And
you just need to read the book to know what she means by it.
That's right. So, different things would sort of set me off and I'd write these big sort of sections. But then for so many years, that's all I had, all these beautiful, unrelated-ish, sort of related, only I knew how they were related, sections that just kind of needed bringing together. It needed to be focused. And the wonderful writer Charlotte Wood told me, you need to create a single container. So I translated that in my own mind to the Tupperware container. Put everything in the container and then kind of get rid of everything else that's not in the container. It was like, hallelujah, now I know how to bring this thing into some shape. So yeah, that all took a long time.
So this was a metaphorical Tupperware container?
It was. It was a Tupperware container of my mind.
Well, that's very apt for something set in the 1960s.
Yeah, and it's very much of the world of the characters.
I like that, the Tupperware of the mind. That's some really great writing advice from the Australian author Charlotte Wood for Tracy Sorensen. Sarah Lestrange, where does this story begin?
So this story is told by Lucky the Galah, of course. Lucky tells the story by channeling the messages from the satellite dish in town, which picks up the thoughts and feelings of townsfolk. And I asked Tracy just how this works.
What happened was, as the tracking station was being constructed, there was lots of, metal cables being unfurled and pinned down into the ground and rigged up. And Galah's quickly got onto this as a fabulous, trapezium or acrobatic studio or whatever. So they're jumping up and down on the wiring. And then what happens is that it's a bit like when, that those stories of the people marching over the bridge and everyone kind of gets to the same frequency and then the bridge starts to shatter. It's that kind of idea where the bouncing cables started to tune the galahs into the dish. And so at that moment, all the galahs around the town of Port Badminton acquired this ability to tune into the dish. So Lucky can kind of understand what's coming from the dish. Most of the other galahs are not that interested because it doesn't feel very relevant. But because Lucky is, forced to be living among humans and kind of get interested in human things, whether she particularly wanted to or not, she's grudgingly becoming more and more interested. She tunes right in and she's able to kind of decipher what the dish is telling her or saying or emitting, because the dish is just kind of emitting. So, yeah, like he's able to tune in. And because the dish has kind of is bored now, because it's finished with the moon landing and now it's kind of swiveled round to look at the town because it's bored, it's kind of receiving, you know, the thoughts, the rueful thoughts, the sad thoughts, the contemplative thoughts of the townspeople. So Lucky in this way is able to kind of tune in to what's going on.
One of the characters I guess she's tuned into is Evan Johnson, whose rise and fall kind of mirrors her fall and rise, I guess. Introduce us to Evan Johnson.
Okay, well, Evan Johnson, I guess he's a bit of a trope in Australian literature, and particularly the sort of bloke that we might have encountered in the movie The Dish. He's a man in long white socks and horn-rimmed glasses. He's got a pocket with a biro in it and a packet of cigarettes. And Evan Johnson, yes, he's come to town to be a worker at the tracking station. So he's kind of come from Melbourne and he's come to this remote town on the northwest coast of Western Australia to help with the moon landing, you know, all the Apollo missions and all the ones even prior to that in the lead up to the moon landing. So that's what he's doing in town.
The book is about his rise and fall, but actually, he's just a prop, isn't he? We actually get to know the women of the town a bit
better.
That's
right. That's right. You know, from my point of view, the story of the moon landing has been told often and well from the point of view of these amazing technicians. I would never, you know, take a second away from them. What an extraordinary thing. But, you know, we know that story. And I think now is a time in life where we're starting to listen to other voices, this chorus of other voices, women, children, animals, places, the environment, Aboriginal people. Not that I want to lump them all in and say they're all equal, but they're all traditionally the other or the venue or the backdrop for the heroic journey of the dude. So in a sense, this is kind of a particular angle on the moon landing from the point of view of other people. So yes, Evan is a little bit painted like that. At the same time, at different moments, I feel we do kind of
get a
into
sense
his
of his
soul.
Emotional.
His soul, yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
But to be honest, most of the men spend their time drinking at the pub or going fishing. So I quite liked that there's a bird in the book that has the call, "Did you get drunk? Did you get drunk?"
Yes,
you've
that's
come across
right.
These birds. What are they?
Well, I grew up with them, and anyone listening from the northwest of Western Australia will instantly recognise them. It's the do-do-do-do, do do. I can't hold a tune, but it's a little call like that. And around Carnarvon, where I grew up, we called them the did-you-get-drunk birds. Did you get drunk? Did you get drunk? So, they're sort of taunting from around the edges, and there is a fair amount of drunkenness in this story because, you know, that's just being realistic.
About the pastimes of men at that in that era.
Absolutely.
And the women too. There were some good parties being had in Port Badminton.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about being lucky, because lucky is the galah, and this story is also being told at the time, set in the 1960s, when Donald Horne's The Lucky Country comes out. In fact, her carer, her saviour, Lizzie, gives her books to shred, and one of them is The Lucky Country. So what is it about The Lucky Country that you're exploring in this book as well?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a meditation on luck. I mean, Lucky absorbs through shredding it up. The Lucky Country is probably slightly differently to how me might read this book, but
yeah, sort of captures shreds. So
yeah,
like
she captures
the
shreds.
Wooden salad bowl and the practical man
and the amber curtain, the bead curtain, and the pink coloured toilet paper. Yeah, they're the things that attract Lucky. I guess what I'm interested in. And, you know, themes kind of emerge as you're writing, so it's not necessarily that I sat down at the beginning and made a map of it, but a theme I am interested in is this extraordinary word luck that's kind of, you know, on the horizon in Australia in giant letters, and we keep referring to ourselves as the lucky country, and Horne's book is very famous and also famously misunderstood.
Because it wasn't actually about us being the lucky country. It was a real dig at Australia for being quite artless and lucky.
Yeah, that's right. Being run by second-rate leaders, you know, it's and all this lavish idea about luck. In a sense, a lot of the luck we've had has just been this extraordinary privilege, you know, and extraordinary theft. So it's a stolen country, you know. And we, for me, it's hard to write about Australia today without that, without that niggling sense. And this is not to say that the Lucky Galah is a tract about these things, but it's kind of playing with these ideas as a Galah might.
Perhaps Evan Johnson represents this luck, this privilege?
Yeah, he does. The world is there for Evan Johnson. He steps into it. He, you know, he's grown up after the Second World War. He stepped into, I guess, the high point, or, you know, until now, because who knows, in the future we might get fabulous again. But he's kind of stepped into this high point of post-war Australia, and the whole world is there for him. And it's all fascinating and there for blokes of his type, middle-class white man, taking his rightful place. Yeah, but I guess we know from pretty early on in the novel that that things are not going to turn out too well for him.
I hope we're not giving too much away about the fate of Evan Johnson there, Sarah.
No, don't worry. We know from the beginning that Evan doesn't have long to live on this blue planet. And here's a fun fact, Claire. Tracy Sorensen tells me there's a dish in Carnarvon that has a museum dedicated to its place in the moon race, apparently perched on a red sand dune.
Sounds like a must visit and sounds like a must read. I love this, a storytelling galah that riffs on Donald Horne's Lucky Country.
It's a great debut novel, Claire.
Oh, thanks so much for sharing it with us. And that's our first episode of our debut authors series, made just for you, our podcast audiences. While you're here, please do make sure you've subscribed to the Hub on Books podcast. We have so many author interviews. We've got crime writers, Man Booker winners, even romance novelists. There really is something for everyone. I'm Claire Nichols. Talk to you again on Tuesday.
Outside, watching as the day slowly fades away, hoping that you'll stay right here beside me, wrapped around me. The pink galahs are sitting in the trees in the summer breeze, just like you and me, they found each other. I won't find another. Oh, underneath two different skies is where we fall too many times. Just close your eyes and they'll collide in.